The Retirement Conversation is a series of episodes on the changing nature of retirement today. These conversations are focused on the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition, including career, work, purpose, wellness, social relationships, and leisure pursuits. You'll hear from leading experts in the field. You'll hear the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll find out about practical ideas and tips to create your own. Retirement Wisdom was co-founded by Joe Casey and Dennis Wussman, two former business executives turned professional coaches. At Retirement Wisdom, our mission is to save people from a boring retirement. We hope you enjoy the series and conversations.
Today's retirement conversation is with Dr. Thelma Reese. Dr. Reese is a retired professor of English and of education and the co-author of two books with the late Barbara Fleischer, The New Senior Woman, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife, and The New Senior Man, Exploring New Horizons and New Opportunities, which was recently published in 2017. She created the Advisory Council for Hooked on Phonics and was its spokesperson in the 1990s. In that role, and as director of the Mayor's Commission on Literacy for the City of Philadelphia, she frequently appeared on television and hosted a cable show in Philadelphia. Dr. Reese organized the Family Literacy Symposium at UNESCO in Paris. She co-created the popular blog Elder Chicks, which she maintains today. Dr. Reese is a lifelong Philadelphian and a wife, mother, and grandmother. Welcome, Dr. Reese, and thank you for joining us on the Retirement Conversation today. What else would you like people to know about you that's not in your biography?
I didn't mention that I helped to save the giant clam in Tonga in the South Pacific, and I think people should know that.
Duly noted. That's great.
You are the first guest who's mentioned that.
I take it there are a lot of good stories like that in here, so we're anxious to...
If you get to be old enough, that's what happens. You have those stories.
We want to hear more clam stories. There you go. Thank you.
So, Thelma, I'm interested. Could you please tell us a story of how your blog, Elder Chicks, and your two books with Barbara Fleischer came about?
Bobby Fleischer and I were in our 70s. I'm now 84. And we were retired professors, still with active minds and energy and looking around. And we didn't realize at first, really looking for role models, because our retirement years were so different from those of our mothers. And we were so much more visible and really needing to do something besides play bridge. We started thinking about a book, and our grown daughters said, well, why don't you do a blog first? And we, of course, said, what is a blog? When they explained, we came up with Elder Chicks, for which men have always been welcome to write as well. And that's still going strong. And as we heard from other women all over, we realized that we had so much to tell each other, and that these stories could be very inspiring and help us find our own path. And that's when the first book about women started.
And a lot of things have changed in the world, and retirement is certainly one of them. How is retirement different for women today than it was in previous generations?
Well, it's different even in the last 15 or 20 years. It's changed so radically. And one way to look at it that we found was just to look at the population graph. It used to come to a point at the top where the oldest people were this little dot at the top. Now it levels off. And so at the top of the graph from the Census Bureau is this huge layer of people who are much older, living longer, and still have active minds and something to contribute. So here we were, all of a sudden more visible. Particularly the women before us had really become invisible. We like to say, you know, that they were in rocking chairs, and we still were in chairs, but we really rock, which is a different way of looking at the rocking chair. And we wanted to figure out what was going on among other women and what we could be inspired by and inspire each other with. And so the one of the things that's so different is time, having more of it. And that is a big factor. And today, of course, this is an incredible moment for women. And we are being inspired not only by each other, but by very young women, as we just saw recently.
Absolutely. And I was really struck by the stories of all the women in your first book and how inspiring, as you mentioned, they are. Yet, I noticed that you weren't focused on the idealistic types of stories, those superhero stories where people are climbing Mount Everest during vacation, and those types of stories that we sometimes read about. But you focus more on down-to-earth, real-life opportunities and real-life challenges. What inspired you about the stories of the women you interviewed?
Yes, we weren't interested really in the stories. And not that they weren't interesting, but they weren't inspiring to us. I mean, the stories of women who automatically have celebrity and great material wealth and limousines waiting for them at the door were not what we were looking for, because we weren't those women. We wanted to see women like us from all walks of life who could make something really good of their lives in their later years and fulfill a period of really continuing development instead of diminishment. And so that was our focus. Who is the extraordinary, ordinary person that you know? And there's, as soon as we mentioned this to anybody, there were referrals galore, so that we had more than enough people to choose from whose stories that we could allow to be told in their own words in the book.
And that's one thing that jumped out to both of us about your books, your points on role models, and really that there's a lack of role models today. And at least in my opinion, I think the stories you provided give role models. But you also noted it's important to follow your inner guide to become your own model. How can people tap into their inner guide?
I think what happens is, as you really continue to develop in your own life, you do find out who you are. That's one of the advantages of age. You really do continue to, or begin to really know yourself. You don't like everything that you see, but you have time to change it. And you have time to keep growing. It's such a different time to do that. And to continue to learn. It's so easy now to learn. That's extraordinary. And more people, the people who are entering, let's say their 60s now, are virtually all computer savvy. That wasn't true even 10 years ago when we started thinking about elder chicks. And you may remember getting the encyclopedia at home. It almost filled the room. It was so exciting to have that. Nobody buys them anymore because everything you want to know is at your fingertips and on your keyboard. So anything you want to explore is right there. It's very easy.
When you talk about the advantages of age and people basically having time to change, time is a big element here. And one of the things that strikes me as somebody who's in his early 60s and is that the importance of mindset and the people you spoke to and in your own view, how important is the qualities? What qualities of mindset should people be having? What should they need to be working on in order to free themselves and be able to be more available in their own minds to learn and grow?
I think one of the important things is to kind of defend against the idea of celebrity that's so enormous today. I think you have to focus on who you are and what you personally can do. I know of a group of women, for instance, who just meet once a week, and they've done it for years already, and they're still doing it just to write postcards to their congresspeople on a given topic. This is a once-a-week activity. It's partly social, and it's also doing something good. But it's finding something to do that matters. And it isn't about being known for it. It isn't about being celebrated for it. It's about the fact that you're a human being and you have something to do about yourself and for the world. So I think the focus has to be on how do I continue to grow? There's so much to learn. We'll never learn it all, but we can still keep trying. And that's what keeps our minds active.
I like the way you said that. It is there's a simpleness to this in some respects. People don't have to dig deep to look at a major cause if they don't want to, but they can keep it relatively simple and still find meaning. Yeah.
Absolutely. And finding meaning is really the root of everything, isn't it? I mean, that's what happens in your own life, and you do it. People do it in different ways and through different avenues, but they do it in ways that in some way not only helps themselves, but if in the end it helps anybody else, that's what gives it real meaning.
Thank you.
It's a great story about the once a week writing to the Congress people, because it really echoes what we see going on recently, as you mentioned, with the March on Washington and all the different events across the country. And it's that same type of effort in parallel.
Yes, I think that people are so frightened and horrified by what they see as a sort of chaotic world, and they're worried about their children, they're worried about themselves. But if they find something to do that's positive, and the accent is on the positive, it's not on the being against, it's being for something. Being for something that's healthy and brings some kind of feeling of joy or satisfaction or peace, I think that is just the root of everything that you can do as you age and finding peace yourself.
Now, you mentioned in that last answer being concerned about ourselves, and that leads me to, can we talk about us men? We're definitely a different species.
Definitely.
And what was different about interviewing the men for your second book, and what, if anything, surprised you?
Well, everywhere that we spoke about the book about women, someone in the audience would say, when are you going to write about men? And usually someone else would say, they'll never talk. But actually, they were wrong. They did talk. In fact, the first place we went, we found one of the unusual, because there still aren't that many, one of the unusual men's groups that actually do get together and talk about more than a book or politics or sports. And this was in New York, in Bronxville. And we sat down in this group of men, and the first man turned to Bobby. They were in a circle. There were 23 men. And he turned to Bobby and he said, well, you want to talk about virility or senility? And there's a story about that in the book. What we did find that was surprising was that the men were very happy to talk, the men we spoke to, and they talk, and they're in their own words in the book, and they were wonderful. I think nobody had been asking them these questions. We couldn't find books that weren't about financial security, keeping fit, or even maybe mixing a better martini in your retirement, but about personal growth and development, there was truly a dearth. So we knew we were onto something. We wanted to call the book Manning Up to Retirement, because we knew that boys had been told from when they were little to man up. If the ball was coming at you and you were liable to cry, don't cry. Man up. It meant hold everything in. Be stoic. That's how you show you're strong. That's changing tremendously. And most men that we talk to today wouldn't tell their kids that.
Do women find it easier to with this transition into retirement than men do, by and large? Did you notice that?
Yes, because women have a support system from when they're little girls. Women are able to and have always shared intimate knowledge with each other. I could see my mother get on a bus or a train in her 80s. By the time we got off, the person next to her would have confided the most intimate details of their lives. My mother was just nodding pleasantly the whole time. But women do that. They tell each other everything. And I remember the first man in the book, who is a wonderful man in California, his ex-wife is in the book about women. And when I asked him, well, Bob, if you have a problem, do you talk to the men you play golf with and that you meet every week and all your friends? Who do you talk to about it? Well, I call Wanda. He doesn't talk to the men ever about anything intimate still. But he will call his ex-wife, who remains his friend. That's his friend. Men often don't have it. And that's changing dramatically, fortunately, I think, for men. Because they are more open with each other and they recognize that this is not a weakness, it's a good thing.
Well, I'm sitting here stoically because I'm very interested in the topic of your concept of manning up in retirement. And because us men, as you mentioned, do tend to focus on ourselves, I'm really curious of just getting your advice on what are the essential ingredients you need to man up in retirement?
For a man, I would say the absolutely most important thing is to remain or become a social being. Being with and sharing with other people is the guard against a real killer, which is loneliness. And solitude is not the same as loneliness. It's okay if you're alone, if that's okay with you, and if you also spend time with other people. But being really lonely all the time is absolutely, literally, scientifically proven a key to an earlier death.
That's a great distinction, though, between solitude and loneliness not being the same, really highlighting how important it is to engage with the world. And one of the things I noticed in your books was really talking about how important that is, but also how important it is to keep learning and staying open to new technologies, as you mentioned, and pursue new adventures. And given your background in education, what advice would you have for people on how to be a lifelong learner?
I think it's so easy now. I mean, all you need is Google. All you need is some curiosity. When I said that I saved the giant clam, I didn't do it alone. And I'm not doing it anymore, but I have done, and there are certainly people my age who are still doing these things. I went to something called Earthwatch, which is a nonprofit organization in Massachusetts, and they have trips where you pay to go, but you're not a tourist. You're working on something in a group. And when I look back, I realize there were men who were in my group who were there alone, who were finding something important to do in the world, where what you're doing is making a contribution somewhere to a scientific or social need. And that was life-changing for me. I did a few other of those trips as well. But it can be something around the corner. There are people in my neighborhood who are feeding the homeless, literally, at a non-denominational church 5 blocks away from me every day. And they turn up and they serve and they go home. Meanwhile, they have interacted not only with other people their own age, but, and this is important too, but they've done something that's intergenerational. So putting yourself into a bubble where you're only with other seniors is also a mistake, I find. I think the stimulation of being around other people is important, and it also makes you understand that whether you have realized it or not, you are a role model yourself, that other people see you now. You're no longer invisible as you age. So you want to be a good one. You want younger people to see that you're not senescent. You're not losing it. You're gaining it.
Great point. Dennis and I always compare notes as we read these books, and we tend to see things from different perspectives, mainly because I'm from Boston and he's from New York, so it's built in.
We won't hold that against either one of those.
Yes.
Two cities I love, yes.
And of course, Philadelphia is on our list of great cities, even those of us who lost the Super Bowl to your city. But one thing we pulled out in common was that the stories in your book show a dynamic tension in retirement. On one hand, there's freedom and independence, which are great things. But on the other hand, you also wrote about that things aren't really always like the brochures. There's a lot of obstacles to navigate and loss to deal with in retirement. How do people navigate those different elements?
Well, it's not easy. You know, the famous Betty Davis quote was, old age is not for sissies. And that's true. And it is when you need your strength. And the hardest thing really is loss. There's no easy way around it. But you have the strength to get through it, deal with it, make it something that makes you even stronger. And it's a time when you also recognize the need for other people in your life and how important it is to have support from friends, from neighbors, that we're all in this together and that this has happened to everyone. It hasn't only happened to you. And that does make it easier. For some people, they find, you know, great meaning and solace through their religious beliefs. And for some, they find great solace and meaning in other ways. And you have to find your own. But it's there. You can't cover it over. And you can't say it's not going to happen and you're not going to have to deal with it. But what is inspiring to me is when I see someone like the man who is still lecturing about Einstein in his community, and he can barely see and he can barely hear. But he has so much to contribute, and people love to hear him. He's marvelous. He knows so much, and he's sharing it. It doesn't have to be something that extraordinary. The 100-year-old woman who is now gone, who was in the book about women, had knitting next to her. It was for babies she didn't know, but she had found a place that would accept things she could still make because somebody needed them.
Purpose. Purpose, somebody else, being linked to them somehow, which is always very interesting to me. One of the people in your book that caught my attention was Charles D. of Denver. And as I recall, he was financial, he was involved in the financial advisor. But he had a purpose, and he had a sense of humor that kind of kept him going. How important did you find that to be among people in this part of their life? The importance of
enormous, enormous. I think if you have it. And if you're fortunate enough to be around people with a sense of humor, there's absolutely nothing better. And just, I guess, maybe it's certainly not what I report about not looking at celebrities, but I do think of Norman Lear, who is, what, 95 or 96 now, and still making sure that people understand how important laughter is. And I remember that years ago he wrote about actually using laughter, listening to funny things, reading funny things to get through an illness. And sometimes, really, you look at the absurdity of things about yourself and the world around you, and you think, well, God must have a sense of humor because this can't be seriously happening. I can't really be that person I just saw in the reflection in the store window. But once you get through that, you sort of adjust your thinking a little bit.
I'm banking on God having a sense of humor.
Just look at the platypus. Yes. That's an example.
The chapter you had on meandering, I found very interesting from the standpoint of, there's a couple of quotes in there. The meander itself is well worth the trip. I think a lot of people that start out in retirement, after they go on their little retirement honeymoon and say, hey, I'm free, right? But they can tend to start meandering a little bit. And you actually in the book, it struck me as important that people have a balance between meandering and structure. And do you find this more important for men versus women, or equally the same?
Well, it depends, because I think it's probably more important for men still. That's going to change in the future as more women are more devoted to their careers for longer periods. But as we are right now, I would say it's more important for men, because so many men really defining themselves by what they do, by their jobs, you know. And the day after someone is asking you to manage something, for example, or cure something, or do whatever it was you were doing, you can really be in a feeling of confusion. Who really am I? I'm not whatever my job title was or whatever my job function was. And so that, I think it is more difficult for men to find that structure, and also to have that kind of time, because often with couples, at the moment that a man retires from something, he's suddenly at home. And, you know, the joke is, for women, I married him for better or worse, but not for lunch. And there he is. And he's at a loss, because she's already she has a structure to her life. And he is seeing the difference and feeling the difference. So to meander, to begin to look at all kinds of options, can be fun at first, and then it can be kind of a challenge. Where do I land? Where do I want to land? And it's okay to try something and decide, this isn't really what I want to do.
Trying something, but trying. I'm always intrigued by people who are type A personalities who retire and the struggles that they kind of get with. And I can see that in some of the people that you interviewed in the book. How much harder is it for them? And are there any tips for them?
I think it is. And there's somebody I'm thinking of now who is not in the book, but is a man who always ran everything. There are people like that in the book. But I'm thinking of somebody who was living in a huge condominium building here in Philadelphia, who really became the guy who organized almost everything in that building among the residents. And not everybody loved him, but people really were very grateful to have somebody who not only was able to do that, but very happy to do it, because it was using everything he knew how to do in a way that it wasn't a paid job there, but it was something that really used his talents beautifully. And he organized a whole lecture series and other things in the building. So people do find in nonprofit work, for instance, a way to use the skills they've always had. The difficulty sometimes is using them in an organization where other people also have had such skills.
I was going to say that, and also learning how to work with people and having a little more patience. I think it's, that patience is a virtue. You really have to be patient with people. Those are great, great tips for somebody. There's a lot of type A's out there that will struggle with this.
Patience, respect and appreciation for finding out what others really can do, and not making them feel like you have stepped in as leader. There's a man in the book, and I don't remember if we talked about this aspect of his life, but I know it from personal experience, because when he tried volunteering for things, and he is the retired, semi-retired physician in the book who has had many changes in his life and really followed along with his wife's medical career too. I know that when he would volunteer at a place, he would feel highly insulted that they didn't want him to run it. And this was not good for him. It was never good for the place he was volunteering. And finally, nobody really wanted him as a volunteer. So you have to, when you are used to running things, if you can't run it, you have to find out what it is. Have a little humility at first, baby. That's not a bad quality either. And it comes with respect for what other people do and can do. And that you're in a new learning situation, too.
Yeah, if you just open yourself up to that learning, you'll actually have a lot more fun.
We really appreciated the richness of the different stories in both books. And one theme that came across was every story and every retirement journey is unique. But perhaps there are some things that everyone should pay attention to, some common denominators. And what would you recommend women pay particular attention to? And what do you think is key for men to zero in on?
I think that women have to accept the physical changes in how they look. By the way, one of the surprising things about men was some of the first men that I talked to volunteered that they felt they were no longer as attractive as they had been. And, of course, that's not true to women looking at, because they say of men, as long as he can still drive at night, he looks great. But anyway, but I think that women really need to accept that they still have, or even if they never thought that way, they have a lot to give. They have so much that they can give, and the world needs so much that they can find things that are going to be meaningful to them and that are not superficial. It's not just the game that you're playing. It's fine to have a game and have that social activity, but find something also that heals the world in a way. And for men, I think to cultivate the social side of yourself in the sense that it's not about having fun with other people, although that's great and I recommend it, but it's the social responsibility part. It's the caring about another person and other people and what you can do and the contribution you're making to the world, because it's contributing greatly to yourself. It's going to make you feel good. It's going to make you feel worthwhile. That's what meaning is all about. And take care of yourself.
And how important that is. Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, I will tell you, we have a joke in our house, because now that we're in our 80s, we are losing a lot of people, our contemporaries. I said one day to my husband, you know, the only people who are calling regularly are the drugstore people to tell us our prescriptions are ready. And he just said, well, the next time they call, why don't you keep them on the phone and see if they'd like to have dinner tonight?
I think I might recommend that to Joe tonight. There you go. It's the simple things. That's quite inspiring that we don't have to work at this hard. It's great. Thank you for that. So as we wrap up the conversation with Dr. Rees today, there's a point at the end of the book, the Senior Man book, there's a point about manning up and growing into your gifts. And in the conversation that we had today, there was a lot of conversation about the importance of finding something to do that's positive, looking at and finding proper role models, lifelong learning, becoming more social. There's a lot of things that are opportunities, and there's a lot of them that seem pretty simple for people to get started with, yet people can get stuck in this in some regard. So whether you're a man or a woman, I'm sure growing into your gifts is an important philosophy. What suggestions would you have for people to help get started to figure that out for themselves so they don't drift too long in this area?
Well, I think one important thing is not to expect, not to anticipate that you're going to feel wonderful right away when you start something. The important thing is to just take one step, and that's why in each book we have a whole list of possible places or organizations where you might offer to volunteer. And that one step will often provide all the rest of it. Because when you engage in something that you think, well, it's worthwhile, I may not stick with this forever, but I know that my going there will be a useful thing for somebody. So if I go there, that's where I'm going to see other people who care about the same thing. So already you're making another step that you didn't realize you were. And already you're starting to learn something new. It may be something you want to develop further, or it may not, but try it because you have nothing to lose. And it'll get you out in the fresh air anyway. And if you can't go out in the fresh air any longer, it will connect you some way, online perhaps. But make the connection. It's just one little step. It doesn't have to be everything.
That's wonderful. Make a connection. Take the first step. Give yourself a break a little bit, I guess, too, because it's an adjustment.
Exactly. Give yourself a break. Don't expect, you know, you're going to change the world tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Thelma. Really appreciate you spending the time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you.
That was a great discussion. Dennis, what jumped out to you?
A lot. But to be succinct, as I often challenge myself to do, the importance of socialization, being involved with people. I mean, Dr. Reese brought out a few things that, and she said it's so important to stay connected and important as you're getting older to be more connected with people. Growing into your gifts is the second one that jumped out at me. Use your strengths. This doesn't have to be that difficult, but stay positive and stay focused and find out what those strengths are and then start to use them and start somewhere. The power of being connected and starting are two key things that jumped out at me. And finally, take care of yourself. Give yourself a break. It's okay to meander a little bit, but you don't want to go too far off the rails. So a good combination of meandering and structure were powerful things that jumped out at me. What about yourself?
For me, the stories really illustrated how important it is to have a vision that there can be something better in retirement, that can be actually a great phase of life, even though there are struggles and challenges. There are different ways to get at it, and they shared a lot of different approaches, different angles, people's different creative ways of building the life that they wanted. So I thought that was key. And for me, I've read both books, got a lot out of them. As you know, I read a lot of books on this subject, and I'd highly recommend them, not just for anyone who's at this phase or thinking about their own retirement, but also people who might want to consider for a Mother's Day gift or a Father's Day gift. I think they make tremendous, thoughtful gifts for people that can have a real impact. They also come with the discussion guide, and that opens up the possibility of them being very useful for book clubs, different social organizations, religious groups, etc., that may want to have something meaningful to discuss. It walks you through that. And I think it really gives, again, sources of inspiration. So highly recommend them.
The books, again, are The New Senior Woman, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife, and The New Senior Man, Exploring New Horizons, New Opportunities.
So welcome to our brief noteworthy section, my personal favorite. And this is where we highlight an article that we've come across in the last week or so that caught our attention and is worthy of some discussion and debate, and certainly worthy of your time in continuing to learn about life and retirement. Today's has a catchy title. It's called, Can an Old Dog Really Learn New Tricks? And in parentheses, you're the dog. So what this is really about is that a lot of people think once you reach a certain age, you really can't change. They actually mention someone in a government role that might come to mind as an example of someone who, well, he's X age, he's never gonna change. That may be true, but one of the things that I liked about the article is it talks about that's not actually always the case. Hold on, people can change and do change. And I'm here to really say that I see it every day in the work I do in executive coaching. Just this week, I had two assignments that we're completing, both with senior women, one a CEO, one a very senior person in a financial services firm. And I'll tell you the common denominator was their openness to feedback, A, and B, the courage to change. They made observable, documented changes. Great to see. So I think people can change at any age. And one of the reasons is science, neuroscience in the last 10 years or so, has really discovered this concept of neuroplasticity, which is really about, we've discovered that we can develop new connections, new brain connections at any age. That doesn't, before it was viewed that that stopped at a certain age, that a lot of our education was early in life, and then you maintained and declined. It's not actually the case. You can continue to grow new connections going forward. But that's what jumped out at me in this article and why I think it's worth looking at and thinking about. How about you, Dennis? What did you see?
Those are great points. I think there's what happens if we don't change. And I think there's a risk that you can become boring, irrelevant, probably affect your health. So I liken it to someone that I met a while back, 80-year-old man, vibrant individual, and I asked him what the secrets were, and he's mentioned three things about how to stay more relevant. And he had to do some changing in his mindset. I wouldn't say he was a crusted individual. As a matter of fact, I viewed him as somebody who probably had a pretty interesting life, had some challenges and struggles. But when reflecting back a little bit, and it's always great to talk to people that have been through the journey, he said three things. He said, keep moving physically, keep yourself in shape, keep moving and exercise, and pay attention to your health, because believe it or not, that can help you with change. He also said the good old days were not the good old days necessarily, if we continue to look at things like that. The present is the days that we make, and the present is where we can make the new days, new good days. And he had a very positive attitude about the future and about the present. And then he said, surround yourself and be open to all kinds of people, listen to people, engage with people, and especially younger people, because they taught him a lot. And when I thought about that, I said, so here was somebody who understood the risks of not changing. So I think this article is spot on from the standpoint of, can people change? Sure they can, but they got to be aware of the importance of it, and they have to be aware of the benefits of it.
And one of the things that actually Dr. Reese said, not on the podcast, but in conversation I had with the day before, was that she sees this later phase of life now as potentially a new developmental phase. And that's one way to think about this and approach it differently. That mindset can really open up new possibilities and what you can learn. And my advice from this article, similar to what she had highlighted, is to pick an area, particularly one that's very important to you, just one, not 10, and really start small. Begin to go down the path. I think that can be very, very helpful. But those two things, get feedback to identify an area that's important to you and create a vision and start walking down that path to change.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of The Retirement Conversation. You can get future episodes by subscribing to our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com. Thanks for listening. Till the next conversation, have a great one.